You are tuned to KBBI AM 890 Homer, and you are listening to The Coffee Table. And today we have the local chapter of the Friends of the NRA in the studio, and a local NRA member joining me is Chairman of the local Friends of the NRA, Greg Collins, and Ralph Crane, who is a local NRA member. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron.
Well, thanks for joining me. And so we're going to get to quite a few things today. And we'll talking about local gun programs, a bill moving through the House right now, and ongoing national discussion over gun control. But before we get to all that, I want to start with you, Greg. If you just want to explain, there's a difference between the Friends of the NRA, which is the funding arm of the NRA Foundation, and then the NRA, the national arm that we've been seeing pop up in the news, and kind of what people generally refer to as the NRA.
So the Friends of the NRA is a fundraising, totally non-political. Every dime we raise goes back to the local communities or communities in Lower 48. All of our funding is generated toward firearm safety, training. We help fund gun ranges, all sorts of different shooting programs, all the way from young children learning through the Eddie Eagle program and up into adults and shooting teams. There are a lot of high school-based, college-based shooting teams in Alaska and nationwide.
Okay. And, you know, in the local group, is it a pretty active group? Is it how many members are in the local group?
Homer Friends of the NRA has about, I think we're at about 18 committee members. And we don't have a local shooting team at this time. We're looking for a coach. So if anybody knows of a good coach, I could really use one.
Okay. And we'll talk a little bit about what the local group does. And I kind of want to start about, there's an interesting one when we were talking yesterday. There's a National School Shield, and it's the safety assessments for schools.
Yes, National School Shield is a program that we have funded for the last several years. Last year, I believe that we got 22 law enforcement officers trained by, like, the Secret Service. And so they come in and look at a school to assess it, just like they would say the president's coming in. And they lay out and do a report that they give to the school board or the principal, and it shows all their weaknesses, and then they are able to address those. The training is 5 days, very intense, and they go do the trainings in Anchorage, I believe. We're trying to get some trainings down here on the peninsula. For some reason, Anchorage is a long ways away.
and as far as when you're saying, like, weaknesses, is that things like doors or making sure that they're just protocols are in place for making sure certain doors are locked or things like that?
It would be protocols as far as doors. In every building, there are doors that shouldn't be opened, you know, unless you had to access a segment of the building. But sometimes those are open to the left open on accident, and they're trying to secure these facilities, the schools, to a point where not just anybody can just sneak in. They've got to come in the front doors. Fire exits, of course, you know, should be able to be open to get out, but their entries, they're trying to confine the entry so it's a little more controllable.
Okay. And have we gotten any of those assessments on the peninsula, you know?
I don't think there's been any assessments done on the peninsula yet. That's one of my goals this year, is to get together with the Kenai Peninsula School District and get them on board with the program. The other advantage to the Friends of the NRA and the NRA Foundation is that they will help the schools fund some of these upgrades that need to be done. And so they can apply for a grant, and that grant money would go toward fixing, say, doors that were broken, doors that weren't functioning properly. Say they wanted to be able to put a lockdown system in place, they can do that.
And while we're on the topic of funding, so that these programs are funded by these local groups, and how does that funding system kind of work?
So there's approximately 25 committees in the state of Alaska. There's North Alaska, South Alaska. We have a lot of them off the road system, a lot on the road system. We all work together throughout the state, and last year we raised $1.2 million, which is pretty sizable. And 50% of that money has to stay inside the home state. So we go in February to a delegates meeting where they give us a book full of grants, and we have to read through them all. And then we vote and basically disperse all that money. So we gave to the Kenai Peninsula, for example, we gave Snowshoe Gun Club for their well-armed woman and their women on target programs, got about $14,000. The Homer group got, for just the women on target program, about $12,000. We also funded Kachemak Emergency Services has an EMS crew that trains with the police departments, both state and in Homer. We gave them a grant to get them bulletproof vests and tactical helmets in case there is an active shooter situation in our area. They can go in with the police department. They're trained to go in, and they can start working on anybody that's injured immediately. That seems to be the biggest problem with an active shooter. EMS never can go in until they've dealt with the shooter. Now they're trying to adjust that. So we're saving people way ahead instead of them dying because they didn't get care.
Yeah, and so you go through these grants every year, and as far as I wanted to talk about that as well for KISA in those vests. So now without that, they're not able to even participate in this training, or there really wouldn't be a point in sending them in, while an active shooting is happening.
Right. Without the proper protection, I mean, it's just like fire gear. We have to have certain things, and this would be a step where we have to have the bulletproof vests. I wouldn't want to be shot while wearing one because it's going to hurt.
Yeah. When did the KISA get that equipment?
They haven't got the equipment yet. They just got the grant last week. They finalized their paperwork, and so that money should be on its way. I would say by in the next month they should have their gear.
And how much does something like that cost? I mean, it can't be cheap to get the training.
You're looking at about $1,000 plus per set, and that's just a vest with plates and a ballistic helmet. They also have a med bag that attaches to that vest, so they can have access to their tools.
Okay. And does the grant just fund for the equipment, or does that also come? Are they going to be able to spend some of that money on the training?
No, the training will be funded by the department.
Okay. And is this training that they've done before, or is this something that's going to be added on top of?
We have four members of our department at Kachemak that have been working with law enforcement already.
And you mentioned this is something new as far as fire departments and EMS getting into this kind of training.
Yeah, it's real. Well, for us, it's new.
Yeah, I might add that both Greg and I come from a first responder background. Greg's active right now. I'm retired. I was wearing ballistic vests back in the 90s when we respond to certain scenes, when we're during certain hours and certain locations in town. We'll go ahead and gear up with the proper protective gear. So it's been going on since, in my own experience, since the 90s at least. Even back further than that, when we were to respond to riots and so forth back in the 60s.
Okay, but it sounds like it's a real important piece that most, I think, wouldn't think of as far as in terms of first responders and trying to make sure that they're able to respond in certain situations.
Yeah, I've been on the fire department for about 10 years now, and this has just come out in the last about year and a half where I was really aware of it.
And what are some of these other grants that are kind of going out to these other programs? You mentioned some women programs for gun safety and then also sport shooting.
So We start out with a program, you know, you've got Eddie Eagle, which we fund. They get the stuff that teaches the little kids what to do if they find a gun laying in the house, you know, tell somebody, don't grab it, don't touch it, all the way up to they're walking home from school and they find one laying on the ground, don't pick it up. But if you don't train them and teach them, then they're going to do something silly. Anyway, so the next step up, we've got, there's a program called Teens on Target, which I haven't got one started here yet, but they're working toward that. Then there's Women on Target, which takes women that don't have any firearms experience but want to learn. And we fund that with not only guns, ammunition, targets, and we help pay an instructor.
Okay, and for, I mean, what can people expect if someone wants to get involved in Women on Target? What is the, you know, you mentioned it's training in shooting, but I mean, I guess what can they expect? What kind of guns would they be shooting, and what kind of targets would they be shooting at?
Basically, they start out in a classroom and they're taught gun safety 101, and then they work their way up. They get their day at the range. They go out to the range and they're shooting. They generally start them in handguns, 22s, revolvers, semi-autos, just kind of, you know, a nice spread so they're familiar with all of the different types. Single shots. Then they move up to the next phase would be rifles. So they start, and pretty much it's all 22 stuff. On the range day for the women, if they have their own guns, they can bring them so they become more familiar with them. And then they move into shotguns. At a point later, there's several classes in. It just gives them an all-around familiarity with the different types of guns.
And does it seem to be pretty popular as far as getting people into?
We don't have any trouble filling classes. It's amazing. Currently, the biggest I guess you'd call it new market in the gun world is the women. They really are getting into it. And I've shot with a lot of them, and they shoot better than most men do.
as far as, you know, when we're talking about the gun safety component, is this hunter safety or is this just basic gun safety?
Basic gun safety. Hunter safety teaches you not only basic gun safety, but then it gets into hunting situations with other people. Because a lot of times, you know, when you're out at the range, you're shooting, could be shooting by yourself. But this shows you how to work as teams. Other thing of hunter safety is it teaches you game ID, which is really important. In hunter safety, you're taught how to cross a fence with your gun. You don't lean it up against the fence and step over the fence because it could go off. You lay it on the ground.
And
you don't ever pick it up by the barrel.
Right. And so does the local group offer hunter safety? Is that something that's part of the
offering? There's hunter safety instructors in Homer and Anchor Point. The Kachemak Gun Club, the president of their gun club, actually is a certified hunter safety instructor. And he has quite the program.
Okay. And, you know, and as far as for someone that's looking to get into, say, sports shooting or even wanting to go hunting for the first time, I mean, where is the good place for them to start getting familiar with firearms? Is it good to get into these type of programs, or is a hunter safety program good to start with?
I think you're better off to go learn about the guns first and then go to take hunter safety, because you need to be familiar with what you're shooting before you get into the hunter safety class. Back in the day, eons ago, when I was taking hunter safety, I had already been shooting for 10 years. So I started real young.
Okay. And then what are some of the other offerings? I mean, you're talking about there's other gun safety programs that the local group provides. It's not just a woman on target.
Yeah, so you got, I work a lot with the women's side of this. A lot of guys think they know a lot about guns. Some of them, not so much. There are people that I will go either coach them and get them up to my level of safety, or they don't shoot with me. So there is a step above Women on Target, and that's called the Well-Armed Woman. And they actually go all the way as far as you want to go. They'll go to hand-to-hand combat, how to defend yourself, situational awareness. They teach a lot of that.
Okay. And is and in as far as how often are these programs?
Women on Target will probably have 3 to 4 classes over the summer. It's a little cold right now. They really don't like to go to the range when it's blowing in 20. But the well-armed woman actually meets once a month in Homer. They have their own group. It's called the Well-Armed Woman of Kachemak Bay. And I can refer people to other training facilities that they do charge to go to. You've got, Majority Arms out of Soldotna. They have a lot of everything from basic all the way up to advanced tactics. Point Blank Firearms Training out of Palmer. They actually come down here and do classes for us. So there's a lot out there. If you want to know, I can poke people the right direction.
And this sounds, you're mentioning tactical trainings. This sounds like more like almost kind of like a self-defense thing. Does it have a sport shooting component as well?
Sport shooting, these guys are not teaching like hunting. They're teaching self-defense. As far as hunting, my suggestion is go get your hunter safety. Talk to Tom Hagberg out there. He can kind of point you in the right directions for maybe some hunting tune-up.
Okay. As far as you mentioned, you guys had a sport shooting team previously.
So we had in Homer, we had a group called the Kachemak Skeeters, and they were a trap shooting team, and they did very well. They actually traveled to the Lower 48, did some competitions. In Alaska, there are high school-based shooting teams, college-based, and they travel. One of the junior ROTC out of Anchorage just went to Camp Perry and placed second. That's pretty good for little old Alaska.
Yeah.
And then with these teams, it's all like small bore rifle. They do trap. So it's small bore would be like an air rifle or like a .22 rifle. And these kids are excellent shots. And, they actually set up their ranges in the gym at the school, and then they shoot in the gym.
Oh, okay. How does that – I assume a lot of sandbags?
Yeah, they have target traps, and it's super safe.
And so there's a difference, for those who might not know, in between like skeet shooting clay pigeons, with shotguns and throwers and things versus other types of sport shooting, what you're mentioning with the 22s, if you kind of explain. Yeah.
There's for target shooting, you've got, your trap, your skeet, and that's all shooting clays with a shotgun. And the better you get, the smaller the bore of the shotgun you can use. I would like to get to the point where I could shoot with a 28 gauge or a 410 and still hit my targets, but I'm not there yet. As far as target shooting with a rifle, there's all sorts of it. You can go start with a 22. I'm all the way up shooting long range now at 1,000 yards with several different guns and several calibers, and some of them actually kick pretty hard.
Okay, and so as far as those long range, is it hitting – I mean, what kind of targets are you shooting at?
What you're shooting is at steel targets, and they score you. So you've got a spotter watching, and they make a game out of it. They'll put a target every 100 yards, and you'll start out at 100, and you'll shoot 10 rounds out to 1,000. And the guy that does it the fastest and hits the most targets wins.
Okay. Is this sport shooting getting more popular these days?
It seems to be. You notice that sports shooting kind of follows the economy. So as the economy gets better and better and people are making more money, they tend to go shoot more. I know that's how it is for me. I sometimes run out of money and I can't afford to go shooting anymore.
Yeah, well, and it does sound like, it's a somewhat of an expensive sport to get involved in.
It is definitely not cheap. I mean, we pumped $500,000 into the state of Alaska, and most of that went for targets and ammunition.
And as far as you said, you're looking for a coach. Is there hopes to get that sport shooting team back up and going?
Yeah, we would love to find a shotgun coach that can teach trap and skeet. We have the skeet throwers. We have the full use of the Kachemak Gun Club for that team. They have a Connex that's stocked full of ammunition and targets. So everything's there, and the shotguns are there. So it's an active program. I just need a coach to run it.
Okay, and it's not just you know, the gun safety programs or just the safety programs for youth that you guys do. You guys also do, you know, and we talked a little bit about funding earlier, but you do a lot of funding, and also you do funding for your members. You have a banquet coming up on Saturday.
Yes. Ed Stating, one of our local police officers, has been diagnosed with kidney cancer, and he's currently in Seattle being treated. We're doing a fundraiser for him, working with his fundraising group, and we're just helping them out. Saturday at 5 o'clock at the CCC Church, we're going to take over the gymnasium and have a little potluck dinner, auction. There'll be a silent auction, I'm sure. Anyway, there's going to be several fairly nice guns being auctioned, and at our banquet, which we held March the 3rd, we had one of the prizes was 5 guns in a safe that was locked up, and the guy that won that in the raffle donated that back. Larry Cabana donated that back to a live auction item, and all that funding that was raised at the live auction, which is about $7,000, went to Ed. And then we had 2 more guns donated, and those brought another 16, and then there was a past the bucket. So we ended up at about $10,000 for Ed there. And that's helped him get to Seattle, get his treatment started, and it's helping keep his wife and family to be able to go and visit.
Okay. And is that the main way? Is it a lot of I remember growing up going to a lot of like gun banquets and things. Is that the main fundraising mechanism, or what other things you guys do for fundraising?
Well, we do a lot of raffles. Of course, everything is Friends of the NRA, you know, pretty much everything is keyed to a gun. We did auction off a snow machine at our banquet this time, which was kind of fun.
Cool. You know, in just a few minutes, we are going to take a break here. But I do want to remind our listeners that we will be opening up the phone lines here soon. If you can always call 235-7721 is the local number here. If you want to call toll free, you can call 800-979-5224. Or you can always email info@kbbi.org. Please attach your name to that question. In just a little bit, we'll start talking about some state gun issues, and also the national discussion as well in a local or a state house bill gun control measure going through the House currently. You are tuned to the Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. You are tuned to KBBI AM 890 Homer. I'm your host, Aaron Bolton, and you're listening to The Coffee Table. And today we have the chair of the local Friends of the NRA group, Greg Collins, and Ralph Crane, a local NRA member in the studio with us. And we actually have our first caller on the line, Kyle Lintz. You're on The Coffee Table.
Yeah, good morning, Greg and Ralph. Appreciate you taking my call. I just wanted to promote the idea of biathlon ranges, well, really throughout the state of Alaska, but particularly there could be a good location out at McNeil Canyon and Eveline Ski Trail area. So shooting 22 gauge at steel targets at 50 yards, but you throw in the skiing component, and it makes it a little bit more challenging. Are you guys looking at that at all?
Yeah, actually, I'm very interested in it, and would be if we could get a group formed up, get their nonprofit status in the proper spot, I would gladly support that.
And you know, as far as I've seen this on the Olympics, but what they ski for a certain distance and they have to shoot from the skis? Is that the idea?
Yeah, and it's all timed.
Okay, so
you're breathing hard.
So it's adding the physical exercise component to it. Well, thank you, Kyle, for your call. I wanted to talk a little bit about, I moved to Alaska within the last couple of years, but I haven't actually purchased a firearm here. So for those who have never purchased a firearm in the state, what is the process they can kind of expect to go through?
So the process is you find the gun you want, of course, at whatever store you happen to be at. You have to fill out the NICS form, which asks a lot of questions, a lot of data. You got to put all your stuff, driver's license, physical address. You have to have 2 forms of ID, And then they type all that into either into the computer or they call the next system. It was down yesterday, so there was no gun sales in Homer yesterday. But it'll be, I'm sure they got it fixed by now.
Okay. Is that a statewide system or is that a federal
system?
That
is a federal system.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for someone who's looking to get into shooting for hunting purposes or sport shooting, I know there's a wide range of firearms out there, but what can they expect to spend on something if they're looking to just get into shooting for the first time?
You can get into a 22 rifle for probably $150. You can get into high-end guns. Sky's the limit.
Yeah, I've seen some some guns that are worth more than my car.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, Ralph has been very, very quiet here in the studio, and so we'll let him do some of the talking now. And I want to talk about a little bit about state gun issues. I mean, what is there a kind of a thing, issues on the mind of gun owners in this state, or is it all kind of tied into the national discussion on gun control currently?
That's a very broad question.
Well, we can narrow it down.
But. Locally, one of the issues right now that's active and contemporary is the HB 75 that's working its way through the House. It's been amended a few times. I think the latest, and I honestly haven't been staying up on the latest, but the latest that I did hear is it started out as a bill proposing a law that would allow, when it first started, a family member, immediate family member, to report somebody that they felt in the family that was not stable enough to be around firearms or have any control over firearms at all. And subsequent to that, the court would be petitioned for removal of the firearms temporarily until, you know, the person that's the subject would be proven to be capable of having firearms or being around firearms. It's since been amended to provide that reporting capability to just the police officer. And they still have to petition. They have to go through due process, petition to court for removal of it.
Yeah, and there's actually the amendment last week that was made to it. It does allow only the police officer to file for that petition, but then it also it does have a provision in it that would allow the guns to be seized without a warrant. As long as the officer followed up with filing in court within 3 days after the seizure of those guns, and it sounds like it's a measure to handle situations that are more immediate in nature. You know, is this something that is? Do you think that it's good for Alaska? Is this the kind of measures we should be passing in this state?
That's one of those. The question is if it's used properly. Absolutely. Who would not want to take away a high risk from a high risk individual? And it gives police department the tools that they need when they see something to do something immediately about it. There's ways that can go wrong. That's one reason I was glad to see that get away from any family member. Anybody that's been an emergency response for very long at all knows what family members are capable of with each other, but that was a good modification, a good amendment to it. So, and it still requires that the maximum loss of a firearm for somebody that's deemed by a police officer to be not stable enough to have those. It mandates they have to get a warrant from the court within 3 days. So, it's a move in the right direction.
And, you know, and as far as the national discussion has, you know, there's been plenty of measures proposed and there's been kind of the discussion over providing more mental health services versus actual gun control measures, limiting the access to guns. And I've heard a lot of people, the discussion in Alaska seems to be a little bit different. I mean, is this kind of discussion different here, or are we having the same kind of discussion everyone else is having, just factoring in subsistence needs and those kind of things?
I have to say that I think Alaskans are more protective of their firearms because of the subsistence issue. It's more prevalent here than I think it is in a lot of states. So we tend to get myself, and in any speaking that I do is, you know, entire my own experience. But myself, when somebody starts talking about removing firearms from my home that have are capable of 10 or more rounds, you just took my ptarmigan 22 away from me. So we do get a little nervous about taking firearms away because of that subsistence focus that we have, the hunting and so forth.
And, you know, as far as, I mean, there's been talk about whether it's appropriate to take some of these actions at the federal level, or there's been some state measures that have been passed in Florida and in other places. Is this a state by state issue to allow for each state's needs, or do you think some of these measures can be passed on a federal level to address kind of some of the same concerns and issues?
Well, obviously, if it's if the concern is within Alaska, using subsistence as an example again, obviously we would want more state control over modifications done to, especially to taking away weapons.
And I want to remind our listeners, you can give us a call at 235-7721. That's the local number. You can call toll-free at 800-979-5224, or you can always email us at info@kbbi.org. And Greg, I just wanted to ask you, we talked a little bit about yesterday, as far as the national discussion that's been kind of going on, has that affected the perception of the Friends of the NRA, or have people, is that popped up more as far as about people asking what it is and what it does?
I think it has been approached. A lot of people don't understand the differences between the NRA, the NRA ILA, and then of course the NRA Foundation, which we've helped fund. You know, like I said earlier, all of our funding, everything we raise, has to go to nonprofits and for purposes. We can't lobby, we can't do any of that. So once you explain that to people, they seem to figure out that it's we're okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was, as far as you know, we talked a little bit earlier about sport shooting just seeming to get a little more popular, and you tied that to the economy, as far as, you know, people having more money in their wallets to actually go out and participate in these kind of sports. Do you think the national discussion on gun control and just kind of it being in the forefront of the brains, do you think that's also a factor that people that are interested in shooting guns is kind of subsequently drawing them into?
I think that there's a lot more interest, and, you know, every time the debate comes up, gun sales seem to go up, and a lot of people, you know, buy guns and that's their thing. They go out and target shoot. And, you know, there's a lot of non-hunters that have guns, and they go out to the range regularly. And it's all about their skill. They're trying to beat the last time they went out. And, you know, it's like shooting baskets. Oh, I got 10 free throws in a row, but I didn't make 11. Well, now these guys that are shooting clays or long range, they're wanting to get the perfect score.
And, you know, and Ralph, going back to you, as far as, you know, we're talking about HB 75, you know, you mentioned that, you know, if this is used appropriately, that this is something that, you know, I think most people could get behind. Do you think we need more or more gun control measures in the state, or, you know, kind of pose a question earlier, or do you think this is more of a, as far as the national discussion goes, but do you think this is more of a mental health issue that could be addressed in Alaska as far as providing more services? Or do you think, I guess it's focusing on the guns versus the other components of the issue that people have been talking about.
There again, the question is certainly broad, as far as in favor of more gun control, no, I'm not in favor of much of any kind of more of any kind of control unless it's promulgated properly. And that's one of the things I think we're running into issues right now on trying to come to agreement on what actually will be the solution. Nobody that I know Absolutely nobody, whether they're a gun user or not, wants kids to be killed in school. I mean, it's just ludicrous to even in. We can't even get our mind around how somebody could even do that in the first place. So, if we could even start out with appropriate understandings or common understandings of common terms that are used, assault gets thrown around a lot, and it has a very specific definition. There's other definitions that are defined by the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms that generally people that are arguing on one side or the other aren't paying any attention to what's common language or common terminology. So if we're to come together on a solution, that's always a good, if you look at any law that's written statewide, I'll just use that as an example, the very first section you go through is definition. I used to make laws related to fire. I wouldn't promulgate them. I would write them and then give them to the body politic to bring into law. And the very first thing we have to do is come to a common understanding on what it is exactly that we're talking about. So if we can do that, or when we do that, we're going to see more solution-oriented focus on stopping what is going on contemporarily. It was unheard of when I was going to high school. You know, I'm old enough to know and old enough to remember when we used to carry around our after-school hunting firearms in the back of our truck and didn't have to worry about them getting stolen, didn't have to worry about them getting misused. We did have to be concerned about whether they would be accidentally discharged. That's, you know, as far back in history as we have things that go bang. There's accidents that occur, and so we focus on safety programs to prevent that.
And, you know, it is a big I was reading through some things about the Friends of the NRA last night, and a big component was it was talking about using that education component as far as to get people that are not gun users or gun shooters to become familiar with that. I mean, for either of you, I mean, do you think that's a big part of it, is trying to get both sides to kind of come to the table with the knowing these terms or being educated about firearms, even if they're not going to go out and shoot themselves? Do you think that would bring the debate a little bit closer on both sides as far as people understanding each side?
Oh, most assuredly. Again, coming to a common understanding and taking the scare away. I mean, I'll divulge right now that I don't own a single, what I call a black gun. Never have, probably never will. I've got plenty of ones that do my hunting and target shooting without having to go to a different kind of firearm. But I know enough about them to know that, you know, they're first of all, they're not all automatic. I know that you have to actually apply to ATF for a permit to even own a automatic weapon. I know that if you want to fire an automatic weapon because the curiosity is there, you can go up to the valley and request of the Alaska Machine Gunners Club up there. They have an event that they welcome people to come in and see what they're all about and learn from it. So there's a lot of opportunities to take the scare away from what I've grown up with as a tool, every bit as scary as a shovel or a rake or a chainsaw. They all have the potential to inflict harm, but if they're used as a tool, it's just generations of us using them as a tool.
And you mentioned a black gun. Is that what do you mean by?
What I mean by a black gun is in circles of gun users and hunters and sports people and so forth, a black gun would be a sporting rifle. It's no different than my Ruger 10/22 that has a removable 10-round clip, or I can put a 25-round clip.
Magazine. I'm
paying too much attention to what's going on in the news. Yeah, I can put a 25-round magazine in it if I get into a particularly large flock of ptarmigan, and I haven't gotten my 10 that day. So.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of discussion over, you know, different parts of firearms. You know, there's, you know, been a lot of discussion about the bump stocks, but also a lot of discussion about magazines and limiting those. And you mentioned, you know, a 25-round magazine being able to, you know, if you get into a large flock of birds, you know, you have the capacity for that. I mean, so what is the attraction to larger magazines, you know, in the hunting world or the sport shooting world? Or and do you think that's a proper discussion to be having about limiting the size of those magazines?
I don't know that I would call it an attraction. It's just like any other tool we use. I used a chainsaw before. Some people need a longer bar to cut larger trees. The reason that I don't even like 25 round because I find that they jam too often. So I stick with the 10 round, and I just get better at replacing it really quick if I'm starting to shoot ptarmigan.
And, you know, and as far as you're talking about a 22, which can, you know, inflict its own damage, but versus some of these larger rifles having these larger capacities, you know, do you think that's a valid discussion to be having about limiting the size of those magazines for those more powerful rifles?
There again, if you could limit the size of a magazine to someone that's going to misuse the firearm, I totally support that. They shouldn't even have the firearm in the first place. But let's jump up to a little larger caliber. I use 22 because that's what I hunt more than a few rounds. You talk to most hunters around here, they're going after a moose or bear or anything, they probably carry 5 rounds with them. The stuff is heavy, and it adds to the weight when you're trying to draw a bead on something, especially with open sights. But an example would be, I've got one rifle that's set up on a tripod that's used for varmint hunting, where ranchers love to have you come in and dispatch little furry critters that cause all kinds of damage to their livestock and their feed and so on and so forth. So I've got a 223 that does that. And they carry thousands of rounds with them when they'll go out for a day of shooting with that.
Okay, and we have a couple of callers on the line. We have just about 10 minutes left, so if you want to keep your questions short as we can so we can get to both of you. Shannon, you are on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking calls, and thank you for the information. I wanted to thank the gentlemen who are on the air for your work, and especially on gun safety, and it's generous to do the fundraiser and raise the money for Ed, cancer. But I do have a couple of comments and a couple of questions. First, I want to say that although I do support the Second Amendment, 90% of Americans support common sense gun control, and that includes me and my kids. We support a ban on bump stocks. We support banning all assault weapons. I firmly believe in no guns in schools. My kids were part of the kids that walked out of the high school and the middle school saying, don't arm teachers with pencils, arm teachers with resources, not with guns. So no guns in school, and totally support, along with 90% of Americans, common sense gun control, including universal background checks. I saw there was a report on CBS News that Alaska tops the number one state out of all 50 on gun deaths per population. So more guns equal more deaths. And so in Alaska, there's 19.8 deaths for every 100,000 people. Most of those are suicides, but when there's access to guns, the death rates go up. So I know in Alaska also there's no permit required to purchase guns in Alaska. So I have two questions. One, I understand that there are these gun auctions and there's gun sales and pretty easy access to guns. So what about background checks and waiting periods here in Alaska? Can you tell us more about that? And then also, how can the NRA and friends of the NRA support common sense gun control in Alaska? I hear what you gentlemen are saying about safety and making it safe for kids, and I totally applaud that. Our family hunts, we're moose hunters. We also have guns, but gun safety and common sense gun control. Can you tell us more about that? And I'll take my call off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Shannon.
Common sense. I used to equate common sense with bucket seats. Not everybody has the same size bucket. Shannon, thanks for the call, and you asked some valid questions, and you make some good points. In Alaska, I think we just explained, Greg, I just explained earlier what the process is for purchasing a gun in Alaska. You said quite well that the rate of gun deaths in Alaska is the highest in the nation, and you did mention that the largest amount of that is suicide. It's actually 2/3 of it is suicide. Would taking guns away or making them harder to get to when somebody was contemplating suicide? As an emergency responder, I always go back to my own experience. The majority of suicides that I had responded to were not even gun-related. And there again, it's hard to get our minds around how somebody could do that to themselves, let alone somebody do something to somebody else. But there again, suicide is its own special problem. Would taking guns away from somebody that's suicidal prevent them from committing suicide? Who knows? I certainly don't. Would it make it less likely that they would commit suicide if it was harder to do, or if they thought it might be messier, or, you know, who knows? I can't answer that.
And we have one more caller. Bruce, you're on the coffee table. We have just about 7 minutes left, so if you can make your question short and to the point, that would be appreciated. Go ahead. You're on the coffee table.
Aye, aye, sir. Yes, I took NRA gun safety training when I was 10 years old in Minnesota, and it really made me feel a lot more confident and safer, and I just want to thank Greg and Ralph for the work they do, and just really recommend to all the parents out there that if you have kids, get them into gun training if you can, and also if you haven't taken an NRA gun safety course, do it when you get a chance. I mean, it can save lives and reduce the accidents. And I believe I read recently that even these school shootings are almost all done by perpetrators that lack the NRA gun safety training. I was just wondering if Greg or Ralph, either one of you guys know about, have read about that.
All right. Thank you, Bruce.
I have no knowledge of the NRA gun safety class background of anybody that's been a mass shooter.
It kind of goes back to our discussion a little bit, you know, earlier versus, you know, we're talking about the warning signs of some of these shooters, you know, for mental health. We're talking about the suicide just as far as whether taking the guns away would actually prevent someone who is suicidal from acting out on that tendency. You know, I think a lot of these questions all come back down to that root. Is taking away guns or limiting access to guns the answer to a lot of these problems, whether it be a suicide or preventing more school shootings or preventing any other kind of other kind of shootings, active shooter situations like we saw yesterday at the YouTube headquarters? I mean, is taking away guns the answer, or are there other solutions that you think states and the federal government should be looking at?
Shannon brought up I think, you know, I had a little fun with it, you know, using the bucket seat analogy, but common sense. If we could get to common ground on the causation of these types of events, we would go a long way in preventing them, or better preventing them, preparing for them. Certainly the Friends of the NRA with some of the classes, some of the resources that they provide goes a long way in that. But as Greg alluded, nobody's asked for it. Has the Kenai Peninsula School Board come to the Friends of the NRA and ask for the training that's available to them, the evaluation? If again, common sense is a good term, but we've got to work harder to make it common.
Okay. Well, I want to think. Oh, did you?
Yeah, I got something real quick here. The common theme that I'm always hearing is universal background checks. It is required when you buy a firearm through a dealer, you have to fill out the paperwork. You will be checked. We're putting on a gun show in Soldotna Memorial Day weekend. We will have FFL dealers there, and we will require every gun that is sold in our gun show, there will be a background check done. So there you go.
And real quickly, we have just about 4 minutes left, but that has been a common complaint on the other side of the argument as far as gun shows being a loophole. Is that a voluntary thing, or is that something that's required?
That's required on new firearms. So generally when you go to a gun show, there's people there with old guns, and there's people there that are private sellers. They can still require a check, the person selling the gun. But that is the only transaction that can happen. If it's a dealer selling, doesn't matter if they're at a gun show or in their place of business, they have to sell that way. They have to go through the NICS system. We are requiring at our gun show just so I don't have to listen to it.
Is that what I mean? Yeah. And we have just about 2 minutes. Is that something that's common for people putting on these types of shows?
It's becoming more and more common because of, we don't want felons to get their hands on a gun.
All righty. Well, thank you guys for joining me in the studio. We had the chairman of the local Friends of the NRA and Ralph Crane, who's a local NRA member. Thank you both for joining me in the studio this morning, and you've been listening to The Coffee Table.
So I would like to invite all of our community, Anchor Point, Homer, to the fundraiser for Officer Ed Stading, which is Saturday at 5:00 at the CCC Church on Bartlett Street. And there's a Facebook page called Stading Strong that you can go to, and it'll show a bunch of the auction items, things that have been donated, and then it's going to be a potluck. There will be a dessert auction. So if you want dessert, bring money.
All right, thank you.